Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I just wanted to thank Linda and the ATOD section for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. I wanted to actually ask before we started out, just to get a sense from you and the audience of the level of work that's been done in health equity. How many would say that they've spent a year or less either working or doing research in health equity? Can I just see a show of hands? Less than a year? Okay, how about 1 to 5 years? 5 to 10? And how about over 10 years? Okay, you're going to do the presentation for me. Okay. Thank you. That just really helps to provide kind of a context of how I should frame this. I just wanted to mention that APEAL is, in addition to doing work in Minnesota, is one of 10 national networks funded by CDC to do tobacco control. So we've been fortunate to be involved in that initiative. Today, what I'd like to do is really talk about investment. I think the titles of every single presentation in this session starts with the word investing. And what I'd really like to share about is the important role that community capacity building plays in advancing equity in tobacco control. Talk about historical choice and our choices now, and talk a little bit about the difference between using a tobacco disparities framework versus an equity framework. Coco did an incredible job in talking about sacred use. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, only to say that in addition to American Indian tribes and communities, other communities of color, LGBT communities, have a history with tobacco that we really need to know about and talk about in terms of the context and how it impacts communities today. That certainly includes the targeting. And when we talk about choice, the industry often uses choice as an argument for allowing individual smokers to be able to choose to be a smoker or tobacco user. But really, when you look at the history, was there really a choice that communities had, both in terms of individual smokers, but also the relationship that communities had with the industry? For example, during the time of the civil rights period, there were very few corporations that were donating money to African-American communities of color to do similar work. And so as a result of that, these relationships formed. So it's not only important to look at the history in tobacco control, it's also to look at what data is presented when we talk about disparate groups and how that data is presented. We work a lot with the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community, where if you lump all the data together, there doesn't seem to be any tobacco or smoking problem. But once you break that down and disaggregate, you can see high use among certain segments, and that's the importance of being able to find where there are disparities. We'll talk a little about strategies and how we measure success. I'll come back to that. There are so many different definitions of equity. I'm not going to go into it. We've generally kind of looked at the World Health Organization's definition of health equity, which you can read up here. I don't want to spend the time debating different definitions, but to have a starting place of how we're looking at equity. And I think it's important because a lot of times I feel that what dictates funding priorities often is prevalence of tobacco use. And just to know that there are many different things to look beyond prevalence. There's tobacco-related diseases. There's exposure to secondhand smoke. And there's the underlying socioeconomic political inequities, including structural racism and homophobia, that we really need to take into context when we look at priorities. So I want to start with the framework of where we've come as a tobacco control movement, because I think it's pretty significant. It's often touted as one of the major public health successes in the 20th century, and that's certainly true. Just by looking at this chart here, you can see how cigarette consumption slowly increased, or actually dramatically increased up until the 60s, and then has been coming down fairly dramatically. I don't have it all the way up to the 2010s, but it keeps decreasing, up until recently where you're seeing a stalling of the decline of prevalence and the decline of cigarette consumption overall. This doesn't, of course, look at specific groups. But this chart really shows where there have been significant decreases. And there are people that would like to show the connection between major tobacco control policies and the decrease in cigarette consumption. I think tobacco policies has made a tremendous impact, particularly smoke-free policies. Two examples of national tobacco control policies, which I think are interesting to look at, are the 1998 Master Settlement Agreement, which is an agreement between 46 Attorney General and the tobacco industry, and the 2009 Family Smoking Tobacco Prevention Act, which is really the FDA regulation. And while these were significant in being able to get the tobacco industry to agree of any type of policy, and it did result in some resources that went to states, resources that went to the American Legacy Foundation, I think when you look at and you reflect back now 15 years ago, how much of that money actually got allocated to tobacco control, how much got allocated to tobacco control for disparate communities or communities of color and LGBT communities. Similarly, looking at the FDA, it certainly provided a regulation of cigarettes. Mentholated cigarettes were not included in that. Little cigars and cigarillos were also not included in that. So I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And just looking at the menthol cigarette use among different groups, you can see that there is a great impact on our communities. When you look at this chart here, which back in 2011 showed the coverage, 100% coverage of workplace laws, the darker colors represented higher rates, and then the lighter colors represented lower rates. If you look at this, you can generally see that there's part of the country that has been less benefited from these tobacco control policies, and that's certainly the South, where we are now. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done here, but that's another way of looking at the disparities and equity issues. So part of policy change is that there are unintended consequences, and unintended consequences can be learned from in terms of future policies. It can be learned from in terms of follow-up steps that needed to provide greater coverage to all communities. And I think there's a recognition that the changing demographics in our country has a great role in all this as well. By 2050, the majority will be those communities of color. And so we really need to, and those who are impacted disproportionately by tobacco. And so I think that that's something that we really need to take into consideration as a movement. So this has been discussed nationally over the last several years. I think there's a recognition that the tobacco control movement is at a crossroads. There's been great successes, but what do we need to do to re-energize the movement? What do we need to do to bring down the prevalence of those groups that are still experiencing high impact of tobacco? And when you look at policy change, and I would agree, and many of us would agree, that it's been an incredible strategy for being able to reduce cigarette consumption. But the way that we've been doing policy change, is that one pathway or the pathways that have been done, is that effective for all groups? And is that only the option that we have to creating the change we want to see? We would argue that one way of looking at it is, instead of looking primarily and only at legislative policy change, that we look at four different levels of policy change, including community, mainstream institution, legislative, and corporate. Now, Coco gave some great examples of what we would describe as community or tribal policy, where it's either voluntary or it may not be as easily enforceable as a legislative policy. But that's a really important, perhaps, entry point for communities to be able to engage in legislative policy. And then the role of mainstream institutions, and what we mean by that are state health departments, local, state, and national tobacco control organizations that are working to address tobacco for all of the communities that live in their region. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. So the framework that we've used, and the key things here are the ones, the boxes in blue, is that if we want to get to that four-pronged policy change framework, two things are really critical for that. One is community readiness, knowing at what is the appropriate level of readiness that communities are to be able to engage not only in tobacco control, but in tobacco control policy. And then the leadership development piece, which helps to build up the community expertise and empowers community. Why leadership? Historically, there have been very few opportunities for our communities. A lot of the leadership programs are designed for what I call the three Ds, doctors, deans, and I'm missing the last D. But those who are experienced and have been in the field for a while, what opportunities are there for those who are in the middle of their career or those who are just beginning the career, who are very important for the future of leadership of our communities? And so our leadership development is designed to take into context where communities come from and help to influence leaders who make the choices for our communities. I'm going to skip this because of time. So through this, we developed what we called the Peel Leadership Model. And over the past 15 years, more than 1,000 fellows from more than five different priority populations have been trained through this model. Our organization started working with the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community, and we were invited by other communities of color to help partner to develop appropriate leadership models for them. And as a result of that work, we've developed a cross-cultural leadership component, primarily communities of color, American Indian tribes, and also LGBT communities. And that work has happened in Washington, Oklahoma, California, Illinois, Texas, but most significantly in Minnesota. And I'm going to make a plug for a session tomorrow at 4:30. The LAMP Leadership Institute, Linda, is going to do a presentation right across the hall at 4:30 if you want to see some of the evaluation results from that Leadership Institute. But the LAMP Leadership Institute, just to take a minute to describe, really has all the components that we would like to see in a comprehensive community leadership program. Well-funded, long-term, great investment in individuals, great investment in community projects, great investment in trying to build cross-cultural collaboration. So not just working within your own isolated priority population, but working across communities. And as will be shared tomorrow, just one example has been one of the communities, African-American community, worked on developing smoke-free policies in foster care settings. And as a result, have been able to get that passed in Ramsey County in Minnesota. And it's being looked at statewide as a statewide effort as well. So incredible ripple effects of the work that the fellows have been involved in. And then the involvement of LAMP and previous LAMP alumni in Minnesota's campaign to do a tobacco tax in July of 2013 is no small thing. So that's leadership development, and the critical piece about that can actually lead to policy outcomes, and I haven't even talked about the other types of outcomes on an individual level, on a community level, and on a systems level. Linda will do that tomorrow. But let me just finish the presentation by spending a little bit of time on equity and disparities. Disparities often looks at a deficit model of what a community is lacking. We try to look at an equity approach where our vision of having communities empowered in this movement is really critical. We used to call equity parity. Back in 2002 at the National Tobacco Control Conference, parity was a theme of the national conference. And in 10 years, we've been trying to do some work, and I think we're seeing more changes, but it's taken a lot to try to get there. And so the importance of focusing on equity, investing in community assets, development, and empowerment. And it's an approach that perhaps is best suited to address systems change, because systems change happens out there in our communities, but it also happens where tobacco control is being done, and those are tobacco control organizations. And what does the state health department, for example, need to do or need to really think about changing to make it more inclusive for all communities to be a part of the movement, to help educate those in tobacco control about what's going to work, and to be part of policy change, because I think that's a really powerful goal for us. But what's needed, I think, between disparities and equities, we need both approaches. We need to look at what contribution each can make, and there needs to be multi-sectoral partnerships. I didn't get to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I just wanted to say that there are several groups out there that are beginning to look at equity in tobacco control, and I hope that you can connect up with some. I already mentioned the national networks funded by CDC. There's a work group from the Surgeon General's report. And then there's a new group called the Phoenix Equity Group, which is an alliance of individuals working at a wide variety of different tobacco control and health organizations who are really interested in advancing equity, which means really doing things different than before. So I am just going to end here. This is a poster that the LAMP Fellows from the first cycle created with a local artist in Minnesota. And it represents that new view that I've talked about, and where you would see very little focused on the health impact of tobacco, but you will see the history of sacred tobacco and the history of our movement. But what you see most in here is the sun, which is the collaboration of all of our groups coming together, and the wave, which means making action happen. So I'm happy to talk a little bit further about this on the side, but I just wanted to provide a brief overview to looking at tobacco control in a different way. Thank you very much.